Certainly. So hello and welcome to this episode 146 of Extinctionati. And as a variation, today we're going to have no settled topic. So take it away, Karina. I hope you have some ideas about stuff to talk about.
Yeah, I thought we started a very good conversation in our Facebook group. In regards to James Lovelock and the Gaia, was it a theory?
I believe it's a theory, yes.
Yeah, and I think I haven't really studied it very well, but when I look at his projection in the Guardian article, where he stated it was an older Guardian article, I think back from 2008 or something like that. He had projected that within 20 years, the climate will go haywire. So, and that's what we're seeing. You know, we're seeing. He said that there's just going to be regions that will become uninhabitable because it's just too hot. And now with the ice melting in the Antarctica, it would be, levels are going to, sea levels are going to go higher, and it's just going to be like just very difficult to live on the planet. So his estimate was by 2028, I guess, but we're already like, we're in that phase now. I think extreme weather really, from what I've observed, I know it started in the late 1980s, and that's why the IPCC was created in 1988. But I remember just after those horrible fires in Australia in late 2019, I felt that it had, extreme weather had reached another level of acceleration. And so that's his, I think he's pretty spot on there. And we'll just continue. And then he doesn't, I don't believe in, like I said, I haven't really followed his work closely at all. So maybe people in the chat would want, you have more information, but he doesn't talk about the energy crisis, and that just adds another factor to it, where the energy crisis could end up being, a negative feedback, because, civilization is collapsing. So I don't know if he took that into consideration, but I think a lot of this stuff is just irreversible. You know what I mean? Like the ocean, the ice melting in Antarctica is irreversible. But who knows? I don't know. I mean, all the scientific research out there is all about saving this civilization. So they don't factor in what happens if civilization collapses, and most of the human population is decimated.
Two things off the top of my mind. First is, in the fire inferno in Australia in 2019-20, I think I heard that 2 billion animals were killed in those fires. 2 billion.
Oh, yeah. That was obscene. Yeah.
25% of the number of people on the planet, just in animals, 2 billion were killed. And the other thing that you reminded me of was, about the poles melting. Because I searched through the, how IPCC says that they have a new report out. They don't, it's just the tip of the iceberg of IPCC lies and United Nations lies. They say they have a new report and they don't have a new report for a month or maybe 2 months. So, but I read the so-called Longer report. You know, they have a stupid report name called Longer report, which really isn't a thing, you know, in academic publishing. Either you have the full report or you have some summary. You don't have a longer report. But anyway, I searched through the longer report of the what do they call it? I can't even remember the full name of the report, but the latest one that was supposed to come out in March. Synthesis report, I think it is. So I searched for Greenland and I found only two in those 86 pages. I found only two instances of Greenland. And then I went talking about irreversible melting or that it's already tipped. They just mentioned it, you know, like for future this and this might happen in Greenland, blah blah blah. So that's kind of the state of official denial. But I think you're correct that the both the North Pole, Greenland, and the South Pole with Antarctica, they are irreversibly melting, and they're going to do so, you know, for however many centuries that takes to complete that. That's what we've done. Are you there?
I want to study that further about the understanding that irreversibility is, especially if civilization collapses and most of the population is gone. There's just something is there's a lot of curiosity I have with that. Maybe James Lovelock addressed that in some of his work. I'm gonna look it up.
Okay, I'm muted. I'm also thinking that some of the things that we can explore and study further are you know the degree to how sure we are about the collapse. I'm not doubting we're going to collapse. I think that's one of the most certain things in a long while. So sort of the only measure about this when it comes to timing when it's going to collapse and what sort of drawn out collapse or fast collapse is going to be. I read yesterday on collapse on Reddit that America has you know like hijacked a Greek oil tanker with the Iranian oil they claim and trying to steal their oil from the tank or something. That was a few months ago, and now the latest iteration is that Iran has seized an American oil tanker and tried to take their oil from the tanks in some sort of retaliation or something. So that's kind of a little sign there for when international trade is going to break down, because you know if you can't sort of trust other nations to let the ships through in international waters, that's kind of the end of shipping. But you know that it may be just some kind of crazy extremists on either side, you know, like Joe Biden's cabinet or something, doing something like, I don't know.
Yeah, there's a it's all about a fight for the remaining resources. I mean, and mainly talking about energy, and oil is the biggie of the fossil fuels. And It's interesting because I was, Gail Twerber goes into so much detail about, she has all kinds of graphs on all the different energy resources. And she talks about the non-traditional ones like nuclear and solar and wind and et cetera. And they're very insignificant compared to the fossil fuel sources. And in fact, she talks about, she goes into detail about complexity and the high level of complexity that our societies have become, particularly in the wealthier countries, and that wind and solar are just they just are part of that complexity. So they wouldn't exist if it weren't for fossil fuels. And so we're all the complexity, we're already seeing it, is starting to dismantle. And the wealthier countries are going to suffer the most because, I mean, it's not that they're going to feel it really badly. You know, other countries have already, you know, struggled being exploited by the West. So for them, they're going to be more resilient. But yeah, so complexity is being lost. And I'm hearing a lot, like in a lot of layoffs are happening. We already have, and like you were talking about global trade is coming down. It's already coming down. We could be at the fourth phase of going into serious economic times. The fourth phase is when the first phase is home prices start to, you know, to go down. And then the next one is, there's a acronym. I think it's called an acronym. It's HOPE. It's, so H stands for housing. O stands for orders, like orders start decreasing. And then P stands for corporate profits. And then E stands for employment. So I was listening to some financial people and they believe that we're already at the fourth phase, where jobs are being lost. And it's interesting, so many tech jobs are being lost. And that would make sense because that's where complexity lies, you know. But it's not just tech jobs. It's just a lot of these big corporations, you know, these, you're hearing like a lot of the big corporations that control the world, they're really struggling because they are part of the complexity, part of the global structure that can't be maintained anymore because of the, you know, they require a lot of energy. So I'll keep you posted on that, but we could be in the fourth phase. I mean, they call it a recession. That just seems like such a mild word for what the West is particularly experiencing right now. I mean, it seems much more severe than a recession, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah, it's the apocalypse, I think. You know, you call it the recession all you want, it's the fucking apocalypse, isn't it? So, this guy, Elon Musk, he has now branded his new future AI. Is going to be something like Truth AI. And he is also at the same time branding Twitter as a truth seeking or truth close operation. So it's going to be sort of not the truth, but it's going to be helped in the direction of trying to get the truth, right? Which is sort of all you can do because you can never be absolutely sure about having the truth. So I think that's interesting in the context of apocalypse, because I think in Greek or whatever, apocalypse means revelation, you know, that things are coming being shown as what they are and in their naked truth or, you know, unbearable truth version. So I think people like your Dr. Fauci, he would have liked to wait a few years before the apocalypse. I don't think it fits in with his pension plans or retirement plans. So, you know, apocalypse is what apocalypse does, and nobody expects it, but, you know, you can't really argue with apocalypse. It's just a thing.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so I appreciate Elon Musk for what he did with Twitter. However, whenever I hear him talk, he's just very delusional in his thinking. I some of the things that he talks about are just like, oh my God, this guy is really delusional. Brilliant guy. I mean, just what he's done, but just very delusional, but very, very helpful in trying to restore, you know, our civil liberties and freedom of speech. So appreciative, but also
this is more about what he is going to do, right? So it's whatever is done already. This is even more, it's going to press even harder for more honesty and more truth. So I think that's interesting, exciting. I think yesterday he said that he tweeted that printing like 100 million copies of a newspaper every day. I think that was maybe America, the number for America. 100 million newspapers in 3 or 4 sections. Printing those every day is a terrible waste of natural resources. So I would have to agree with him on that, even though I've been a paper boy as a kid myself, delivering papers. But I think, especially now that people know that almost everything they print is a lie or some kind of distortion of reality, in the mainstream media. So why? Why cut down a middle-sized forest every day just to print their untruthful news and slander about their opponents, right?
Yeah, yeah. Did you hear about Tucker Carlson being fired from Fox News?
That's almost the only thing I've heard. That's almost the only thing I've heard for the past week.
Yeah, no, I thought it's funny because he had also a big Democratic following too. He's completely okay. So I'm a person on the left. I'm just very, my mind is very, liberal, lefty or whatever. He's definitely on the right. I believe he's quite religious. And I'm not religious. And so, I just know there's a lot we just agree to disagree on, but I think a lot of the reason he was fired had to do with some of the things he's anti-war, pro Julian Assange, and he was questioning the Ukrainian war and all of that, and also questioning the whole narrative in regards to COVID and, that sort of thing. And so a lot of these networks are get a lot of their advertisement money from big pharma, very big, and then also the military industrial complex. And then Murdoch from Australia, who owns Fox News, he's very pro-Ukrainian war, It's basically the people who are pro-Ukrainian war, the only reason we're in that area is because we want to control Russia's resources and their oil, because we want to continue this ostentatious Western way of living, which is not sustainable. And these people want to continue being in power. And so it's about getting to Russia's resources.
But I think he was fired because of the interview he had with Donald Trump about the U.S. bombing of the Nord Stream pipeline.
Oh, of course, definitely.
Where Trump said, "You know, I can't tell you things about our own country, but I wish we hadn't done it." So it was very sort of revealing of, he actually says that America did it. They bombed the pipeline. And I think that interview was sort of what stood out the most, you know, when I thought back to the past couple of weeks. So I think that was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back for the corporation, for the Fox Corporation. I have a question because, you know, I'm a foreigner to America. Yeah. So this thing that you've seen on cinema, on movie theaters for 100 years called the 20th Century Fox, you know, when the movie starts, is that the same company as the Fox Media Company?
I don't know, but I don't think so. I don't know for sure. You know, I stopped watching Hollywood because I feel it's just a big propaganda. I can't believe how propagandized we've been by. I watch a lot of international. If I watch movies, it's a lot of international, independent. I'm so weary.
Yeah, I think it's kind of more honest in a way, because when you watch a movie, they declare that this is fiction, right? So they don't pretend that it's news. This happened last night or something, right? So I've always preferred, you know, like novels and movies to the so-called news, you know, because if you are a real artist, you can tell very truthful stories by making fiction, in a way. So I kind of got the impression that the way that Fox sort of built their fortune, that they used to create their Fox News Channel, that was sort of based on half a century of Hollywood income profits from the movie industry. I could be wrong. No. Most likely wrong. Yeah.
Yeah. I know he's from Murdoch. He's pretty infamous. He's part of on the right side of politics here in this country. You have the established Republicans and the established and then you have the populist led by, you know, Trump is leading in that. And there's a fierce fight between them. Just like in the, you know, the fighting between, it seems like there's more tension between the populist right and the established right than there is in the Democratic side. It seems like on the Democratic side, the left has been lost and they just seem to be okay with Biden. Like, it's just weird. Yeah. But the more, you know, the ones that are really seem to be putting themselves out there in terms of taking risks are the populace on the right. And I'm hearing more and more the Democrats that are very upset about possible nuclear war and what Biden is doing. And, you know, they're anti the war in Ukraine. They want to actually vote for Trump. I'm hearing more and more people wanting to vote for Trump from the left. Not that the ones that are awake, which is not that many. It's kind of like with the Iraq War. The Iraq War, I went to the protests and it was mostly the right wing that it was the left that was really protesting the Iraq War. But the right wing, they were the ones that were making it, you know, were pushing like the Patriot Act, and they were, you know, denouncing the left for protesting, and you know, And now it's more of the right that are protesting the war, which is interesting. It's kind of a reversal, but there are left people waking up. But it's kind of like, it takes time, you know, with the Iraq war, it was very taboo to talk about it, hush, hush. And so hopefully, you know, people start waking up on the left more and more, but it's kind of a reversal, if you see what I mean.
I think it was when that movie, Bag the Dog, you know, that satirical movie, when that came out, it was kind of explained to us Europeans anyway, that it's always been like that with the left side of, or the Democrats in America, they've always been bigger war hawks in a way than the Republicans even. So it's kind of the opposite of what we believe over here, because whenever the Democrats are starting a war, it's always very, very good, very humane reasons, right? And they're going to save people and put girls in school and, you know, that kind of very good and nice things. It's a, kind of the same that the thing that they are doing with Thacker Pass and all of these mining operations for the Green New Deal, you know, that's for the best, you know, like they say in the expression, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, right? So because they're going to save the planet, they're going to dig up and bulldoze and mine everything, the whole planet.
Yeah, I have another theory, though, with the left, and I'm starting to wonder. I'm feeling that the left... I noticed there's this eerie silence from the left right now. And I'm looking here in Portland where I live, which is very left. And also just what I'm, trying to notice around the country, the U.S. I don't know what's happening in your neck of the woods, but what I'm noticing is I think the left are so freaked out by the climate, all this extreme weather, and the right... they're freaked out by the climate. I mean, it's not, but they keep it to themselves. However, the right convinces themselves that it's just, they don't think humans have anything to do with it. They just think it's, you know, cycles, natural cycles. I think they might be more deluded. The right might be more, have deluded themselves thinking that it's no big deal. It's just cycles. It'll just correct itself. We'll go. Well, I think that the left, I think they don't talk about it. They keep it to themselves, but I think they might, that's why they don't even care about this war, is because they might be just so freaked out about the climate. You know what I mean? But they don't, it's not that they're verbalizing, and then maybe they've just come to a realization that there's nothing we can do. Because I really, like, I don't hear anything more about, like, from people saying, oh, we can fix this, or the Green New Deal. There's just, it's all quiet. Like, there's this eerie silence on the left. And I think the left knows that we're screwed. And while the right still thinks that we can, you know, certain things happening still matter to the right, because they don't understand the gravity of the climate situation. You see what I mean?
Well, I think that.
That's a theory.
But I think that's a bit too sort of not nuanced enough. I think a lot of people on the right do understand where we are. It's more like, what can we do, right? So. You know, like the Doomers, they don't have a solution for it. And if you are on the right side and have similar thoughts to a Doomer, you're more like, yeah, this is going to happen, right? And it kind of changes what you are then going to do, because, you know, what von der Leyen is going to do in the European Parliament and Biden and AOC want to do in America that is actually to destroy remaining watersheds and forests and mountain regions in order to make a car battery factory out of the planet, which is not going to stop climate change anyway. You know, even though AOC has declared that she will stop climate change with a couple of new bills that she introduced or supported, we know that no policies can stop climate change. I think that's pretty fair to say. So I kind of prefer the politicians or parties that are not lying through their teeth to me and to young people about stopping climate change when they can't do it. So if I was just going to decide if I was going to decide between two parties based on just that one criteria, I would vote for the party that didn't lie to my face every day about the climate, I think.
Torstein, the thing though is I'm not talking about the leaders. I'm talking about people and normal people, and we're not being heard. We're not being represented. The people in charge are just doing whatever they want to do. We no longer have any say in anything. The people who run the world are corporations and big corporations. They run the world. Well, when I say the world, I'm talking about like the West. So just normal people like us, the ones in power, they don't know what to do. They're trying to, I know in the background, they're figuring out the whole energy thing. It's a big fight in the background on energy. It's that's what they're scrambling about is fossil fuel energy. But on the outside, make it look to the world that they're trying to solve everything by the Green New Deal. So it's all pretense, you know? And the left does it, like you said, the left does it much more, the pretending than the right. The right don't pretend when it comes to energy because they don't promote the Green New Deal. So on the right, what they do is they talk about, we need to drill, you know, we need to look for fossil fuel. We need to spend more time investing in fossil fuels. That's what the right says, because to them, you know, they don't worry about CO2 emissions, or they don't worry about, neither does the leaders on the right. They don't really, all they want is power. The left and the right leadership, they want power, correct? But the left pretends that they care and they don't, you know? But they have to show to their constituents that they care about the environment on the left. So they have to talk about the Green New Deal. But I think more and more people are waking on the left are waking up and realizing that there's nothing that can be done at this point. So I think there's this quiet, eerie silence because they're just afraid, you know? And I think the left is also afraid in a quiet way in just how things are kind of unfolding, you know? But it's just this quietness right now. So I'm wondering are there going to be more voices on the left? What's going to emerge on the left? Now, if we look at France and their protesting, France is really struggling with energy. And a lot of this has to do with, in France, with nuclear energy they're having to shut down plants. And I know a lot of energy, electricity in France comes from nuclear. So they've been struggling more than some of the other countries with energy. The French are also waking up and realizing we're screwed. You know, like they're waking up to what, you know, other countries are going to start waking up like the French are waking up, but they're the first, you know, in the Western countries to wake up and realize that we're screwed. So it's going to be interesting to see to see what happens on the left side. But right now it's just this very eerie quiet on the left. Except for in France, they're really upset and demanding something, because I think because the energy crisis has hit them harder and they're already experiencing it right now. Well, I mean, we're all experiencing, but it's become quite severe in France.
Yeah, I think in France, what you also have is a very, very immense gap between the rulers and the ruled. You know, it's like they have basically they have National Front or Le Pen or whatever, sort of the national party on one side, and then they have the whatever party Macron has. And Macron doesn't really have a real party. It's more like just a committee supporting his elections, right? So he's kind of the only reason he wins is that he's considered the least of two evils. Nobody really likes him. And he's kind of a very, very elite guy. I think he's an ex-Rothschild banker or something, you know, very high-level banking circles. So he doesn't care about normal people in France, and normal people in France don't care about him. So there's kind of no dialogue whatsoever between those segments of the French population, I think. That's why people turn to the streets. You know, it shouldn't be, shouldn't have to turn to the streets and set fire to cars and stuff to discuss politics in Western Europe. But that's sort of the breakdown, the level of breakdown we come to.
Well, I think Macron is taking some is taking risks, though, that other European leaders are not. I agree with you. I mean, he's an elitist, and he doesn't really care at this point, because he's not running for re-election, so he doesn't care. And the French are, if you look at all the Western countries, the wealthy countries, the French are the leaders in protests. I mean, it's part of their culture to protest. So, and they have a lot of awesome social safety nets that that many, you know, other countries don't have. The countries that come close to having their social safety nets are Germany and then the Scandinavian countries. The U.S. is in bad, you know, we have no social safety net here. And that's because they really crush the left here. Any type of communism or socialism was crushed early on. I believe that's why Martin Luther King was assassinated, because he was pushing. He wasn't fighting. At the end, his main fight was fighting for the poor white and the poor black, you know? And I really believe that's why he was assassinated. They really crushed all the union activity. I mean, in Europe, that was not the case. So basically in the US, our salaries have not kept up with inflation. Since 1970, they've only risen 20 to 30% our salaries on average, while in France, they rose 150% from 1970, and in Germany, 100%, and they have very strong unions there. So it's to be expected that these countries, you know, France is leading now in fighting back, you know, because it's an energy crisis. And Macron did warn the public last year, we are at the end of the age of abundance is over. And it's not that, I think Macron had no choice but to tell that to the public last year, because he knows that the French are ahead of all the other rich countries in terms of protests, you know, And so he had to warn them because he knew what was coming. You know, he knows the energy. The politicians don't want to tell us that we're running out of cheap fossil fuels, you know, because they're not going to get reelected. But Macron had to say something. I mean, he probably was a little bit vague in the speech, but so the French are the ones to rise up. I think a lot of their, why they're upset is, why aren't the rich being asked to sacrifice anything? I think if they could show that the rich are also sacrificing something, then maybe this would where they can all realistically start talking about the energy crisis and the age of abundance is, you know, we're just not going to live these, all, you know, our standard of living is not going to be the same. It's going to be much decreased, you know? There needs to be a lot more honest conversations going on there. So as things, Germany will probably be next because when they bombed that pipeline was set up to bring in oil from or gas from Russia. You know, it wasn't ready to go yet, but that were the plans. So they're going to start struggling soon. I think they have their reserves are still full, and they also give, I don't know if their reserves are full, but they give, they help their citizens subsidize energy. So, but I'm hearing that's starting to change. So it's already affecting manufacturing in Germany. So it's, you know, and I hear that in Europe, just in general, and I'm probably referring to the NATO country, Europe, inflation is 10% higher than it is here in the US. So Europe is going to be erupting, their eruptions of anger are going to start increasing in Europe. And the France has just started. And I think there were some protests in the Netherlands with the farmers and, you know, so it's just going to get worse and worse. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but what do you see? What do you see as the next step? What is going to happen in France? Because you know, you said something about they're going to have a conversation. I don't think a conversation, you know, solves anything. So do you see sort of normal people occupying government buildings, or what sort of revolution do you envision for Paris and France?
Well, I think we're just gonna have to wait and see. But I just, if things just become, if France starts noticing, I think their energy problem is worse, and so they're probably, you know, they have to pay higher costs. I think the more they suffer, the worse the protests are going to get. Because basically when people have nothing to lose, that's when they become really like, they'll just risk everything, even their own death, you know? So, but I don't know if this takes, you know, the French Revolution that happened way, you know, in the 1700s, that people were just so hungry and desperate, you know? So I don't know what it'll take. So it will be interesting to see. But what's interesting in France, that is mostly on the left, that those protesters. And you mentioned Le Pen. She's on the right, right? Correct? In France? Is she the lady on the right?
Well, she's an anti-globalist, at least.
Yeah.
But it's kind of funny because the very first thing I saw from France was at the local library in Norway. We had a graphic novel series, like comics, right? Which was about post-collapse France, you know, with power lines having fallen down and everything was broken down, like after a war or after some climate catastrophe. So that was kind of, when I was a teenager, it was the post-collapse France that we read about in our own language, in translated to Norwegian, at the library. So that was sort of our pop culture back then, in the 1980s, 1970s and 80s, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's
It's finally coming to a crunch now. maybe we will see these same heroes and the people walking over the Alps looking for food and stuff.
And I want to make two more points about globalization and then the aerosol situation in Europe. So globalization with food. So globalization is coming down, but the danger now is the situation with, the food, and I'm talking in the Western countries, the food is controlled by a few mega corporations, and there's a lot of global transportation that happens with food. So it's become highly complex, and that makes it more dangerous. And we're already seeing that. We're hearing about, just grains not getting to areas that are just, needing the, because, and then as areas become harder to grow food, and that's what I see right now in Europe. It's another danger. Europe is warming up faster in the summertime, I believe, in the higher mid latitudes. For some reason, Europe is an area that's warming faster than other continents. And there's some theories that it could be, Leon Simons talks a lot about this. He's from, he's from the Netherlands. I think Chris van Steenberg is from Flanders, but, Leon Simons and James Hansen, they've written some papers, or maybe one paper, on aerosols and just the reduction of shipping emissions, because they've cleaned up their emissions, which have unfortunately removed the white sulfates, which are the reflective kinds, the ones that have albedo. So that has been decreasing just because they've just added scrubbers. But in Europe, it's my understanding with some of the nuclear plants that they started scrubbing emissions. And when I say scrubbing, they're scrubbing emissions, but they're also scrubbing the white sulfates, which are, like I mentioned earlier, it's the aerosols that reflect sunlight. And they're referred to as, James Hansen refers to them as white sulfates. So that could be one of the reasons why Europe is just heating up. And I'm hearing already all this drought, these drought problems already in Spain and Italy and France. I mean, it's looking pretty severe, So Europe is really getting hit hard right now. And I mean, we all are, but Europe is like diving in first, it seems. Of the wealthy countries.
Yeah, but they have a lot of other advantages, like being much warmer than Greenland, for instance, and they have all kinds of tourism going there just because of the heat and the so-called nice weather, which is like drought and sunlight every day, or sunshine every day. So.
Well, people can't afford to travel as much, and also airline travel is coming. It's reducing. The problem, though, is just the amount of fruits and vegetables that are grown in those areas. That's the problem, and grains and things like that.
Yeah, I also heard like 5 years ago, 10 years ago, that Spanish cities on the Mediterranean coast, they actually import drinking water by tankers, by ship, from other parts of the Mediterranean. That was already 5 or 10 years ago. So that's
where was this?
On the Spanish East Coast.
I
just imagine that it's going to spread to other cities and other big metro areas around the whole Mediterranean, because it's a very arid or semi-arid, half desert kind of place, right? Mediterranean. Mm-hmm. So, and the population is not going down, so they need more and more water, and also for agriculture, of course. So, as it gets hotter, you will have much more evaporation and just trying to produce the same amount of produce from agriculture is going to take more water, I think, on a heating planet.
Yeah. No, it's just so much, so much going on. I mean, and another frightening thing is, you know, we're safe in La Niñas, we're not safe, but it's less dangerous than El Nino and even an end zone neutral, you know, and, if we go into another El Nino, it's not going to be good.
That reminds me because I heard today on a podcast about the new community note feature on Twitter. It's kind of a fact check, but it's done by other people on Twitter and done by, you know, regular people, right? So I think maybe I will try that the next time our Belgian friend posts about some iceberg killing the El Nino, while 99% of scientists say it won't, there will be an El Nino. I think I'm going to try to make my first community note, but I'm not really sure about whether I can do that. Maybe I have to be a Vucek paid member of Twitter or something. I can try to find out. I think it's part of Elon Musk's strategy to become a more truth-seeking platform. But instead of outsourcing fact-checking to some dubious for-profit MSM media organization.
I know, that was awesome that he did that, yeah.
Huh?
That was awesome that he did that, Elon Musk.
Yeah, I really like that because he's even done some community note fact-checking of fact-checking organizations. So he sort of he puts up a mirror and says, okay, we can match that. We can fact check you guys and see how much you lie about, you know, because it's really, really ludicrous how you can just write the word fact checker in your bio, more or less, and then everybody is supposed to believe you because you know how to spell fact checker. So then you speak the truth, right?
Yeah,
it's really not much more complicated than that. In Norway, the biggest state-run TV station and a couple of the biggest for-profit tabloid papers, they just joined forces and started factual.no, which is sort of the fact-checking thing in Norway. And they just told the editorial line of those three TV and newspapers. They don't care about truth at all. It's more like we want our side to win, you know. That's more like it.
I think that Europe has just, like, with the European Union and just European countries, they just become so aligned with whatever the U.S. wants them to be, you know, more and more so. Like, they didn't seem like that so much before, but you know, it's just, there's just been the U.S. propaganda has been very strong through our movies, and we've really, you know, it's been a very powerful tool for the U.S. The propaganda machine.
The internet was also made by the U.S. military, so when it goes very fast with the Americanization these days, it's because the internet is like 30 years old. It's been grinding at us and Americanizing us faster than anything else in human history. So it's not all good. It's also some bads there, but I think we can summarize it to be at least for limited areas. It's a good thing. It's a benefit to have the internet, and it's at least possible to reach out to other people. You know, you were talking about what the leftist elite or politicians were doing in America. I don't care about them. I only talk to the normal people. I only shortcut the medium and go straight to the normal citizens in Europe and America, because I don't fancy globalists or militarists or whatever. You know, normal people are much smarter and much more balanced than these corporate horse or Pentagon pixies in the elite.
Yeah, but you know, after the Ukraine war, I can't believe how Americanized Europe had become. Like, it shocked me. You know, just there, it was like a big. You know, we had the wake up in the Doomer community. You know, the wake up for me was 2016, and it wasn't just climate. It was also the ecological breakdown, as well as overshoot and how psychopathic, you know, our culture is, and it's particularly here in the U.S. and, you know, exploiting other countries. And so it was a big wake up for me, you know. I mean, I knew it in my gut, something was wrong, but, you know, you're busy trying to earn a living. That you just try to, you go into self-delusion to be able to survive, you know, but to be awoken by all of this. It was, you know, but I see a big wake up after more people are waking up after this whole Ukrainian thing. But it's a lot of people waking up. They're waking up to how messed up and psychopathic culture, you know, things are. However, they're not really, I don't see a lot of wake up with them. They're waking up to all of that, like the political situation, but they're not waking up to the climate which I hope they would be, you know, which is interesting. But that's
okay. On that note, and speaking about waking up to Mother Nature and Gaia, we're coming up to the 1 hour mark and to the close of this short 30 April podcast. And I wish everybody who is heading out for the night to celebrate a safe and exciting celebration. And be careful with those matches, because, you know, don't set fire to yourselves and to other people. Keep it safe and have a responsible celebration out in the wild. So that was kind of the Beltane extra. Is it something else we have to say before we...
No, that was great. And thank you so much, Torstein. And hopefully more can join us in the future.
I would hope so. I think May is a good month for joining.
Good.
And but first of all, go out and meet Mother Nature tonight.
Yes.
And have a jolly good bonfire, everybody.
Okay. Bye. Thanks. Bye-bye.